one first thing before I start is that, I mean, I think this conference community is not really used to all these cache and memory hardware kind of things, right? So I guess, I don't know. Actually, that's the big question I have.
Right. It would certainly be useful to give some background.
Okay. At one level,
it would be good to give a background on cache and what, how they work. A little bit. I think it would help.
Okay. Well, I don't have.
But
a,
I think so performance is in between architecture and system. So
okay.
Might,
so it could be fine.
Yeah. It may be okay. But yeah, I think background is always good.
Okay. So hello. I'll be presenting a work on memory characterization. This is a work by Neil Karlkova, Professor Ajay Goswami, both from FIU, and Akshat Verma from IBM Research India. This talk is divided in four parts. Spend most of the presentation on motivation. Then a couple of slides on the model, the definition of the model and how to construct this model. Then some validation of this model using realistic application, and finally some conclusion in 2 minutes. So I'll start the motivation by showing you the exact experiment that motivated us in the first place. So this is part of some previous work. This experiment was done to try to show, to measure the overhead of having multiple VMs running in the same host. So basically, we have two types of applications. One on the left is called TCW, which is an OLTP application. The one on the right is spec power. And basically, what we did is that we divided the same throughput on X, request per second, among several VMs. For example, on the left, we see that we divide in one for the case of host in red, and up to 3 VMs in the case of purple on the left. And we see that for the application on the left, as you increase the number of VMs, you have a higher overhead just for adding more VMs. And it's exactly the same work.
So request per second per VM? No, it's total aggregate.
So you see, you are not doing extra work. You have the exact same number of requests per second, but you have this over in some cases, and you don't have it in other cases, like spec power. So we went further with these, and actually this took us quite a long time. We first studied like I/O, maybe CPU, some strange interaction with the memory, but turns out that it was mainly because of cache contention. So in this figure, we see the MRC for the two applications. An MRC is a XY plot, which for X different number of cache sizes, you have different number of meters. So you would expect that as you increase the size, you would have less meters. And that's what happened with both applications. But the thing is that for the application that's not being affected at all as you increase the number of VMs, you have this flat green line. But for the other case, where you increase, as you increase the number of VMs, you have this huge overhead, you have the red one. So that means if you combine somehow many of the green ones, I mean, they were not using the cache already. So if you put more of them in the same cache, it won't be using the cache anyway. So that's why we don't see any effect on caches for spec power. But we try to use this in a more precise way, and we look for models and cache and replacement theory to help us having a more precise explanation of this behavior. And we looked into very old literature on this topic, and we found mainly three main areas. The first one is called the working set model, which was first presented by Benning on the 80s. And it's basically the theoretical foundation for current cache replacement algorithms. Then the second big area, big branch, is the one related to miss rate curves, how to construct this curve where we show misses as we increase the size of the cache. And this is nice because this gives us, a visual and easy to get a performance impact of having different cache sizes. But it's Okay. And the third area is related to phases and phase transitions, et cetera, but because there's a lot of locality in applications. Applications usually grab a working state to work on it, which is local for the moment, and then suddenly change the complete working state. So this phase where it is working with this working state in a stable kind of fashion, it's called a phase, and whatever it changes to a different working state is called a phase transition. So we have these, basically these three models and ideas to characterize model, to characterize memory usage behavior for applications. And but still, these three didn't exactly explain what was happening with the previous experiment. We had a vague idea that using mean-space curves, we could. We knew that for the green light, with the green light which was horizontal, we knew that by adding more of those, they would still keep be horizontal and they would be affecting each other when you have many of them in the same hole. But it was very intuitive. We didn't know anything about it.
So here, I think you're saying that for an MRC which is flat, adding more VMs does not affect performance. That's assuming that the application does not use any other resources significantly, right? Because
yes.
If it were to use memory or CPU significantly, it would affect
performance.
If you put multiple.
Yeah. I would have to say, assuming that
everything else
is not in contention. Yes, that's true. Are you writing down all your? Can you write that down?
Yeah, and it's okay. Getting recorded too.
Okay, that's good. So now let's go a bit more in detail about the working set model, the first one. So basically, what this model proposes is the use of something called the induced set, which is the set of all the items used by an application and in a period of time. And this gives us some idea of how much items and how much cache we should be giving an application, but it's not showing us the whole picture, right? I mean, because how much cache you give to an application actually depends on replacement policies, prefetching, and many things. We can extend this idea of working set by having the idea of a reuse set, which is just the elements in this working set that are being reused at least once. And that's more precise because we don't have to give cache on applications for elements that are not going to be reused again. But still it suffers from the same problems of prefetching and non-realistic prefetching algorithms. And most importantly, you see that how all these ideas numerically can be very, very different. So exactly what to use is now. It was a big question for us.
Are they terms defined by me?
No. These are defined in the Denning space.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then how do you really define the set in relationship with your cache?
Oh, no. I mean, I'm just introducing their work.
Uh-huh.
I'm not talking about my model yet.
I know. So what exactly is the use of set?
A set for them,
yeah.
The in-use set,
yeah.
Is the set of all possible lines being accessed by an application in a given period of time.
In terms of cache?
If it's for a cache line, it's for memory block.
Okay.
Yes, page. Yes. Yes. Then the MRC model. Again, this gives us relationship between the number of misses and the cache size. And it's really just a function of misses versus cache. And things that this is the model, but this doesn't give us a way of modeling very interesting behaviors like these misses. And these misses is very important because it means that if you jump from this size to this size, you have a very large decrease in number of misses. So we'd like to characterize those little things as well. Another interesting thing we saw is that they say we use these needs. So that means that if we have, that this should be EP, and EP. EP is an application. So we have on the left EP running along on red, and two instances of EP in green. So What happens here is that when you have one instance of CP, you have this knee at a specific distance. When you have these two instances of CP, you have double that knee. So that means that this nice sweet spot where you can increase the size cache and decrease dramatically the number of meters is increased by 2. And that's what people typically believe will happen. But we saw that for some other applications, like this one, DPNXP, we have the case where just adding these two distances, these two knees, is not matching up with the real case. We have a gap. And we didn't know how to explain this gap, so we needed a model for that as well.
Where is that gap you didn't see on the figure?
Here.
So, SP alone?
So the thing is that this knee plus this knee will be here. But what happened in reality is that the knee is actually here. I mean, when it starts to be flat.
It's hard to visualize in that graph.
Yeah, I think I'll use a better example. This one is not the best example.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have some other examples where it's clear to see.
So the message is that when you add up just the knee point, the size of the cache at the knee point, that is not...
For some cases, it is the real...
The real
but for
cache,
others, no.
Right, so that in some cases, the total cache requirement when both applications are running simultaneously, and that's the easy one, but in some cases, it is not the,
exactly.
The total.
Yes.
And the question is, it is smaller or larger? Is that...
For example, in this case, it's 1 megabyte of 10 megabytes, so it's 10% of error. So my point was that is a lot, but I don't know if that's a lot.
I think that is. I mean,
that is a
in
lot.
Terms
okay.
of cache, which where the resource is very...
Yeah.
I think, Raju, another question is, can the knee point happen after? I mean, is it more than the sum, or is it less
than the sum? No, it is more than the sum.
But it can happen if less than the sum? Can it happen? Or, yeah.
Well, it could if both applications are using some common line.
Common line.
Yes.
But I think those are very important to mention because it's the basis of the model. Right?
Yes.
Yes. When you look at the cache size, you think about the matching mechanics because your in the end, that's your cache is a subset of what you have. And then, so depending on the size of the cache, and the basic statement algorithm for the cache is based on basically you have 32 bits of memory, and then a subset of it is used to index the block of the cache, right?
Yes.
And then within that block, then you can see that if you have more, there are more associativity than within that block, you can see much more data to push up it. But the thing is, if those two, you can see, if the data from these two different
yes.
Applications, they certainly have a different, their data has different part of the memory. But however, if the part that is used matching to the cache, they share the same pattern, they think they will be competing with each other. So even though you increase the size of the cache, then they will still be competing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
I mean,
however, if you somehow, but however, mm-hmm. if that matching is not that case, then they are not matching to the same part of the cache, then if you increase the cache, you would see something like that. But some other case, you would see something like that. That's what happens.
Yeah, but I mean, we use the same associativity of 16 for both.
No,
games.
it's not
yeah.
associativity. It's associativity. It's mainly associativity because you have no control over that.
Yeah.
Which part of the because it's prefixed, right? Based on the data, based on your address translation code to match into your cache, that is fixed. So then you have no control over that. That's why you would have this kind of behavior.
Yeah, but that means that. This is pretty much random, right? I mean,
so
that means
so,
yeah, but that means that if I run it, let's say 10 times, I would see the reverse, right? I could see the reverse.
No, that's what I'm saying. The reverse. I'm saying that this kind of behavior is normal because it really depends on what it's really depend on the data set of these two different applications. If they are just they are competing with each other in the picture.
Yeah, but.
Your I think your point is with respect to associativity as well,
in some sense, because what you're saying is that if the physical memory occupied by the application were to change,
mm-hmm.
then there might be more or less conflict in the cache.
Yeah.
That's your point too, right? It's possible. It's possible, but in the end, our experiments don't...
I mean, our only real... Yeah.
Right.
We simulate our real...
So the question is, how dominant are those associativity effects in the interference? Right? Is the level of interference because of associativity playing a dominant role in affecting performance? Or the level of interference remains more or less the same regardless of where you put data in there. So it would be good to quantify that. If we can, let's say, choose physical memory locations for certain stages of the application, does the cache interference differ? Is the cache interference different?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would.
But no, I mean, I'm not sure. I'm not. It's not clear whether that it would be if you're picking random locations. But if you can certainly create adversarial choices to make them interfere more. But if you were to pick locations at random, as would be the nominal case, then does the interference increase or decrease by as the random seed is changed, right? Because really you're looking at a more or less random process there with respect to how an application gets physical memory. Depends on the current state, which can be arbitrary, right? But that's a good thing for us to investigate. I mean, does that change this or not?
Okay, let me ask you something. We tried with low and very high associativity. Would that answer your question?
No, associativity is only defined that within each spec, what freedom you have, right?
But if you have very large associativity, you have less conflict.
Oh, yeah.
So we tried with huge associativity and we saw the same behavior. So that means that is not because of associativity. Most likely.
Well, you can see that for level 1, because level 1 cache size is small, but the thing is, for level 2 cache, you cannot do that because level 2 cache size is huge, and not compared with level 1. And then what happens is, if you increase your associativity, then on the other hand, for a limit or fix the size of your cache, then you reduce the number of set size you could have. And then that in turn is more data will be more data. So it doesn't matter from which application will be mapped to a thing. In the end, you would have conflict. Anyway, it doesn't matter if you increase your associativity or not, because you cannot say my associativity is infinite. That is not.
You can't have full associativity.
You cannot full associativity, but that's within each step.
No. We try this for full associativity. The whole cache.
There's no set.
We also try with that. Actually, we tried with that first, and then somebody told us we need to simulate real caches. So we tried with real associativity caches, like 15 or something according to the real hardware, and we saw the same behavior.
So what you're saying, in a sense, is that the associativity level does not make any difference for this specific interference observation.
It could make a difference, but we saw the same interference in all cases. Even for full associativity. That's what I'm saying.
So maybe for this specific experiment, associativity was not the dominant effect. It is kind of counterintuitive or surprising, but there may be other effects that are going on, which is what some of which we are modeling, I guess.
Possible. We don't know.
Okay, but this is something for us to think more about.
Yeah.
Why not? I think we don't have an answer to that. We know that it doesn't, maybe, with your experiment, but we don't know why.
I mean, we're trying to model many kinds of noises, right? We're modeling one because of this. We could model another one because of this. Right? I mean, not that they are beating each other. You can have both. Right?
could also depend on the workloads, for instance. For some workloads, the interference could be because of the associativity. And for other workloads, it may not, associativity may not matter at all.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, what should I say? Say what we leave it like this, full associativity and small associativity.
Right. Yeah. So you can say, for instance, that, I mean, it might seem that this could, you know, be an effect of associativity, because depending on how the application is allocated physical memory, the applications can interfere differently. Right? But we tried with different levels of associativity and we found exactly the same interference. So that led us to investigate some other causes for this interference and or this non-intuitive need when we combine applications.
Okay.
Okay. So before you go to the next slide, the both red lines are different. Shouldn't they be the same?
I mean, these are two different applications. This one should be EP, some mistakes of
okay.
Yeah.
And I think that also relates to this well, because if you have a full associativity, that just that you don't have a staff, that is fully.
It's a full, yes.
And then in that case, you still need a matching mechanism. You choose one, which one to choose from, right? Even in the case that you use LRU, but you never can achieve real LRU, because you don't have a priori knowledge. You can always use an approximate of LRU, and then in that case, you cannot achieve the ideal randomization of pushing the differentiated data. That also contributes. Since you cannot achieve the total randomness, then in that case, that you would have to work because you cannot avoid any conviction. They always have conviction.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I think that needs to be addressed in the presentation somehow. We have to talk about that.
Okay. So, basically, again, as a summary for this motivation, we have existing models which are first targeted at a specific memory level. I mean, I didn't say this specifically, but kind of subtle. I mean, we saw all of these MRCs at one specific level for each one. And we know that there is this idea of phases, but I mean, there is no model that uses both consistently. And most importantly, none of these models even try to model contention with multiple applications. So let's try with the first two, and let's introduce our model.
What does that mean, try with the first two?
The first two points.
So yeah, okay, so this is the...
These are the problems with current model.
Okay.
So we'll address the first two problems.
At once.
At once, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Well, actually, I don't even need to say that. I could just keep it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't think you need to say that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So, we define this new metric called effective use set, ERSA. So, we define as the minimum size do not exhibit thrashing behavior. That's really what we're concerned with, right? And again, this minimum size depends on the replacement in use. Prefetching, associativity, which we didn't consider before, and also the amount of misses versus hits we are willing to accept. It's really just a function of misses. And we define, if we see an E, and an E is defined as a point where you have a derivative higher than -0.1, we define that point as the default ERSA. And I'll call it just ERSS during the presentation. So that point where you have the need for the ERSS.
So did you expand the ERSS and the effective? Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering if you talked about why the reuse set is not adequate. And you need to look at an a modification of that?
What I was trying to say is that those didn't consider, for example, replacement. If they don't consider the actual replacement algorithm, how can they predict how much cash do you need? That's one point for you.
No, not very clear in my mind on that.
Let's say
what
you
that
have
motivation is.
Let's say you have perfect replacement, optimal replacement. You need some size. Let's say you had LRU, you need more size. So this size depends on things like replacement.
The other thing is that the reuse set, as you discussed before, is you could have elements that are used once, elements that are used 5 times, and elements that are used 100 times.
Yeah.
So what version of the reuse set are you comparing here?
Any of them, none of them are this example, the reuse set.
Okay.
I could just leave it to one example.
I think it would be good to have like a specific example to say a model that uses a reuse set defined by a reuse of one is not adequate in this specific case, and why is that? And then to present your idea with the effective reuse set. I think that would be a little more clear.
Okay.
One question
is how do you define your VR as a five and the derivative? So it just depends on the, for example, in our case we had full simulation in this case, so each step is one line.
No, I mean, you're increasing.
X is one line.
You increase your cache size right? From
in line.
10 megabytes.
In line,
so one line.
Yeah, exactly.
One line is one step.
How big is that?
Well, depends on the actual hardware you are dealing with, right? In this case, it was 128.
Bytes. So then your cache size for this case is basically the physical level 2 cache size.
Yes.
It's exactly 10 megabytes.
No. I mean, we don't have a cache 10 megabytes.
So yeah, how do you get to all this?
Because this is simulation. We assume we had a cache of 10 megabytes. But we don't, I mean, if you could buy a cache of 10 megabytes, you could do it.
So this is from simulation.
This is simulation, yeah.
Okay, so in the simulation you did it, what you did is you increase your cache size by a line, 2.75.
Exactly, yes. So, putting everything together, the big model called the generalized layer 2 tree is a tree where you have a node per level of memory. So you have the root node would be the considering a phase which has the complete execution of the program up to all individual phases which may contain more phases. And what they say is naturally phases naturally form a tree because phases have phases within phases within phases. And that's how we represent this the memory characteristics of this application. And basically one node is the size of the phase in instruction and the size of the default character. All the computer must be, there is no need. So let's see what happens with a very simple example. Let's say you have this piece of code, just an array A, where you are iterating and just want to get the sum of all the elements. So how much cash you will have to give to this application? Basically, it just needs one variable for the sum, one variable for the for I. Let's say, I mean, to make things simple, let's consider one variable as the size of a line. I mean, but I don't know if that's important to say, that would confuse people.
Most likely, there's multiple cases. What happened is, if you're using a logical cache, you could accommodate more than two instructions, and then depending on the data size, if you are integer, then you have more integer, something like that. So then, it's basically depending on how the variable is defined, what the size of it.
Okay. So let's just call it memory items.
Mm-hmm.
So you have one variable per memory item, and you want to know how many memory items should we give to this application in order to refresh the data. So that is the RSA. Case we have ERSS of 3 because this application needs 3 variables, one for the sum, one for the index, and one for the current position, for the current array at this position I.
I mean, you can use this example, for instance, to show why reuse set is not adequate.
Yeah.
If you can bring that up earlier, I think you can use that example for other things too.
Yes. Okay. You see in reuse, the reuse set will be 2, mm-hmm. which is not enough. So now let's move on to the third item, to the third problem, which is contention. So let's say, which is just trying to model this behavior again. This gap, how much is the gap? So let's say we have now 2 instances of the same application. We have one looping on A and the second one looping on B. And B is looping in such a way that it's an element half as fast as A. Okay? So what happens? If you could partition the cache in 6 bytes, you could give each one of them 3 memory items and no thrashing. All they need is 3 memory items. But because caches are being shared, that means that A is flooding this portion of the cache with non-reusable data. I mean, A is putting stuff in the cache that is not even going to be used. And B is reusing its own data slower than A is flooding the cache. So let's keep this observation in mind. So the effect of that is that in a shared cache, let's say they both start with 3 memory items allocated for each one of them. But because A is accessing faster than B, the next time B was supposed to access some, A would instead access its next array element. So it will evict some. So now A has 4 elements and B has 2. So B will miss. See, next time B accesses its memory array, you will miss. So you need more than 6 elements, more than 3 plus 3. You need some buffer to hold these elements that are being flooded into the cache. Right?
Because one question, so don't you need to store length of A and length of B also?
Yeah, okay. Length of, yes. You have 2 more. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Let's make a number.
Yeah. Put a number there.
Yeah.
So,
that's a good point. Yeah. So you see the thing, right? I mean, you need extra buffer. You need an extra buffer. So we model this, we call this extra buffer as waste stage. So we call it wastage. It's just a buffer to hold non-reusable data and prevent transient addition of reusable data, which was what A was doing to B. So wastage is defined as the flood rate over the use rate. So in the case of the previous application, if A is flooding more, you have a higher numerator, so you have higher wastage. if both are reusing at the same rate, you only need one element. So basically, float rate is the rate at which it's accessing element which is not going to be used. And the reuse rate is just the heat rate over ERS's minus the weight, which is accessing the element that's actually reused. So let's see what happens with this example. In this case, just one application. So for one application, we have a heat rate of 2N over T, because you're accessing some in I. You're not reusing the elements of A, so you only have two. And the flow rate is just accessing the elements in A, because you're not accessing them again. So you have 2N. Let's say you are iterating over N elements in a period of T time unit. So you have 2N over T for heat rate and N over T for flow rate. And if you combine these two with equation 1 and 2, you get a weight stage in this case is just one memory item. So you just need these six elements we allocated before plus one for the weight stage. So if you want to give cache this application so they don't miss, you need to give 3 plus 1, in this case 4.
Instead of saying they don't miss, they are going to miss, right? They preserve their cache hidden behavior.
Yes. I mean, just to be precise, I could say so they don't have capacity miss. Because they will be having people serving.
Right.
So they don't have capacity miss. Okay.
Then you had to define what you mean by capacity and compulsory. If you say that.
But that's like, no.
Maybe some people in the audience may not know what that is.
Okay. So now we move on to some methods to construct this model. Well, one method to construct this model. And basically, starting from the root, that is the whole, seeing the whole application as a unique state. We start at that level, and for this level, we start with we perform three steps. The first one is called the final level identification, which is just picking the next level we're going to target. And that depends on the granularity you want for your tree. Let's say you're just interested of, let's say, going into memory, but you don't care about what happens in the L2 cache, for example. So there is where you could implement that. And then the resource limited execution, which is just related to, you know, for example, if we want to build MRCs, we need to have a way of limiting the cache we want to give to this application. Because we want to collect misses for every cache, possible cache type. So there is where you do that. And then tree is where we get the spaces for the next level. So let's go through this one by one. So resource limited execution. Again, this is just to limit the size of cache you are giving to this level, to this node. So for main memory, there are many techniques. Basically, ballooning is the easiest one. For L2 and L3, there is no easy way of partitioning the cache, saying that this application is getting just this portion of the cache. But some techniques required is page coloring, or just plain full system simulation and just give the system a specific size, or hardware memory tracing, which we also try, but it won't work in commodity systems. And we proposed a couple of techniques. One of them is just using an extra application, which is grabbing some portion of memory. It would be like ballooning at the cache level. But the thing is that for this to work, this balloon needs to reuse its elements faster than any other application in the system. And we only found a way of doing that, which is using some specialized instructions we found in the Power 6 architecture, which instead of fetching the lines from memory to cache and through the registers again, it just hints the memory system to fetch one memory line to the cache and leave it there. So by doing that, we can have high CPI and actually touching elements faster than we would normally in a x86, for example.
Okay.
this part you could potentially skip if you want. I mean, the details of what's going on. Because there are lots of details there, I think.
The thing that, I mean, like, that is that, I mean, the work originally started with this, and then we are always pushing this to the back.
Just the last part.
Okay.
The 6-6 with the specialized instructions.
Okay.
That part.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
You can say that... Well,
you won't work on it.
We have a technique for ballooning, that to make ballooning work at the cache level using cache grabber, but... No, because of lack of time, I cannot go into details, and I'll be happy to talk offline. Because I think problem is that you're trying to summarize in very brief, and that might start people thinking in on different direction.
Okay. Finally, this last step, which is just identify spaces, and what we do is. Basically have a, you know, data for misses versus time, and whenever we see a high spike of misses in a very short period of time, we know that there is a phase transition, so it's a bit more complex, but that's basically what we do. We identify spaces by having everything between five, basically.
In this figure, I think you have to also mention the some steps in the bullets, and then you can present this graph if you want.
Okay.
Right, but directly just showing the graph, either you do that for all the three steps.
Yeah.
There has to be some consistency in how you present the three steps.
Because this is kind of out of context.
Yeah. It's
a
little bit different than how you explained the previous two.
Okay.
And usually it's a little, for people it can get surprising. Right?
Okay.
So.
Well, what we did in the paper was leave this work to somebody else. Yeah? There is already work on this, and we use some magic numbers by some people. So it's just magic.
But it would be good if you're using someone else's work to actually acknowledge that.
Oh, okay.
And talk about that. Then people will believe you more, right?
Okay.
Because if you say that you're using someone else's work, then they can go and look at the source of where you're coming from.
Okay.
Like, I think that's the source of Chen's question.
Yeah.
So then you don't need to depend on them.
They did. And they're good. Yeah. Okay. So finally, validation of the model. So for the validation, in the paper we have more points, but on this presentation, basically, I want to show how we validate this idea of reuse and flood rate and how they impact memory provisioning. And second, how this model defines isolation and how that works in real life. So for the first one, this experiment would just use two applications, DAXP and DCOPY. DCOPY has no reuse and has a very high flood rate. And that is just a regular application. Let's say we have normal reuse and normal flood rate, and we see the effect of having DCOPY on DAXP, because DCOPY is flooding DAXP dataset. So let's see what happens. So in this plot, we have the number of this is what we have, the number of misses for DAXP as you increase the flood rate of DCOPY. Okay. And another thing is that the cache, in this scenario, the cache is of 2 megabytes, and DAXP had an ERSS of 1.6. Okay. So you see at the beginning, when DCOPY is not pickup is not flooding the cache. So you have a very few number of misses for DAX speed at the beginning on x equals 0. But as you increase the flood rate of pickup, you see that DAX speed starts to miss.
Except for one line up there.
Yeah, that line is a very strange case where we strain the paper and I have to remove, but I couldn't remove it here because I don't have the data for this plot.
Okay.
So that's another thing.
So you better get that soon.
Yes, I know. At least I'll have to explain.
Unless you figure out a way to do Photoshop on it.
Yeah. Yes, that's simpler.
No, that's harder. If you have the data, then it's easy.
But I can't come back. So, the point when everything starts going bad for DAXI is this one, 6,000 acts per second.
Is it 8,000?
A bit more than 6,000. Okay, I'm actually using 6,000, not 60,000. So, if we use the...
It's a little more than 8,000.
Would be at 6,000 accesses per second, would be a 4 megabyte. So 4 megabytes plus 1.6 made the 2 megabytes. So you see that after that precise point.
0.4, you mean? 0.4, right?
I have to refine it. Most likely you won't get that one. Something like that.
Yeah, so that's a large wastage for a 1.6 gigahertz.
Yeah, I have to check that. That's basically it. We have this point where we start consuming all the remaining cash, and that's it.
You also
lost
in the
next
number, right? Yeah,
you have 6,000 by 64 and 64 by 1, and the numbers from the left. Oh, we don't know what they are. Yeah, I'll add you. Yeah.
So 6,000
of
them.
Let me try to calculate because I didn't see. 6,000. You have a flood rate of 6,000 and you have a reuse rate of 1, so you have 6,000 wastage per the size of the line. No.
64, right? Yeah, 0.4, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
0.4
megabytes. Yeah, 0.4 megabytes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I have to see that.
But you
said your cache limit is 2
megabytes. Yeah. Yes, it's 0.4. Yeah, that's behind the ERS at 1.6 megabytes. So then
if you add this 0.4, you get to the limit. And that's why just a bit after that is where you start leaning.
Yeah, so actually, then it's the other way around. Because you only have 0.4 megabytes remaining, then you, based on the flood rate, then you can reverse technically your flood rate, then you should find that 6,000.
Yeah. I mean, you only have 0.4 megabytes free for clock, so we fill it, and after you fill it, you are missing.
But then what about the other side of cache, all the way to
this one?
Yeah.
Okay, this is the one I have to remove, but basically what happens here is that if we very tightly give it whatever it needs, we discover that there is a bit of noise.
No, but that's 1.7 megabyte cache, and that's, I think that's fine, right?
No, but... In the numbers, we saw that actually you needed a bit less than 1.7.
I see. And even with 1.8 megabyte cache, you still start missing only at around
6,000 megabytes per second. I think you need to talk to Akshat to get him to explain what's going on.
Yeah. No, I need to review. He said he needs to review.
Yeah. I think you need to talk to Akshat.
Yeah. Okay. Where is Akshat coming, by the way?
I didn't even know he's on vacation.
He said something for
me. He said he's on vacation. Not on vacation, he's just busy the next 2 Thursdays.
Oh, okay.
He's not on vacation.
Okay. So for the second question, how to model isolation? Isolation. So we measure, we use and flood rate for 3 NAS applications. These NAS applications, I mean, I think it's totally relevant to explain what these applications are. Or do you think I should go into detail for that?
If you say NAS, you have to explain what it means.
If I say 3 applications?
3 applications, you need to say what those applications are. Because without knowing about the workload and what the workload does, or you can just say what the workload does. Just like DAXP and DCOPY, you just give it names.
Yeah.
And you give this a name called NAS, and you say what NAS is about.
Okay.
And how does it reuse or flood? If you say those things, that's good enough. You don't have to describe the application and that it's a web server or I don't know what it is, but you don't have to talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, basically, NAS are scientific applications.
Right. So you don't need
that's to all I can say.
Yeah, that's enough. You say what that application does. I think that's more relevant.
Yeah, they do some fluid something.
No, you're not
yeah.
that. Really
ah, you mean in terms relevant. Of power metrics?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. In terms of the cache.
Of power metrics. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So we get these 3 applications, and we combine them in pairs, and see what happens in terms of isolation for megabyte to cache. We predict with our model whether there is going to be isolation or not, and we confirm it with the hardware in terms of cache flow, of hardware cache flow. So we have these 3 applications, EP, BP, and UA. EP has a low flood rate, BP normal, and UA high. And you have the number of misses and the ERSS values. And again, you have a 4 megabyte cache. These misses are in thousands, by the way. No, actually, millions, I think. So, let's see a couple of examples. For example, if you mix EP and BP, and BP, because it's 1.4 megabytes and they both have a really low flood rate, you will expect that they will fit, and actually they do, because you don't see an increase on the number of the sum of the misses for both of them. But if you mix, let's say, UA and UA, you have 6 megabytes, so you are definitely going to miss. So you have 4,000, which is much more than 2,000 you would expect. And if you mix, for example, UA and BP, you will have 4 megabytes, so you would expect not to flood, not to miss.
So regard the voice is different if you mix let's say EP.
Yeah, that's just noise. If you have one way and the other when you have different, it's just noise.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It should be symmetric, right?
Yeah. In this case, the misses is just so small that it's noise because of some barrier. Because these are full system misses. I mean, you get misses for everybody in the system.
Okay.
Yeah.
They combine data and instructions.
Yeah, also. Yeah. But if you mix BP and UA, you should have 4 and fill in the cache, but you see that that's not the case. You have more than double of the number of misses.
Are these only level 2 cache
misses? I'm only doing this for L2 cache misses. Yeah, in this case. And one final experiment. Before we used, very small applications, DAXP, then scientific applications. So we tried this with more realistic applications, in this case Ruby, which is a OTP, database plus web server. TechPower is a Java server simulating some kind of web store. We see what happens when we combine all of them. And basically, I mean, all three of them have normal flood rate. And, well, according to the baseline, which would just be summing up the ERSS values, we would have 7.5 megabytes. But the real case is that we see the derivative of the old cases, the red ones, to be at 8.4, and we predicted at 8.5. So we are very close to the real case. But baseline is just adding up the ERSS value.
Okay.
Yeah. So you see the usage of this. I mean, if you thought the amount of cash you would have to give to this application is 7.5, and you gave them 7.5, you will miss. So you need to consider these websites and model it, and actually with the model we're presenting, you can model it very close to the real case. And conclusions. Most important conclusions are related to contention. So we saw that current models fail to model contention, and this contention can be easily modeled using flood and reuse. That's all.
So I feel that in the motivation part, you should, for instance, use a specific example that you presented at the very end, where you have a simple model that predicts a cache requirement of 7.5 megabytes, then there is the actual cache requirement is 8.4 or 8.5, something like that. So that's a substantial difference.
Okay.
And I think you can use that example to motivate why you want to do this work. Right.
So that's not very realistic. That example.
Well, you actually said that it was more realistic than the ones before. Right?
No. I mean, you mean removing these?
No, I'm saying that that experiment could be there too. But more importantly, I think what I'm trying to say is, what is the impact of your work? I think the impact of your work, I feel that you are understating the impact of your own work. Because the way I would motivate this is to say that in a data center where you have co-located virtual machines and you need to determine which virtual machines to place on a specific piece of hardware, how can you make that determination, right? So that you can avoid over-provisioning or underutilization, right? And this is a hard problem because the cache resource usage of applications is complex. And the interference is also complex. And at that point, you can give that specific example of 7.5 versus 8.4. Because I think the motivating experiments are nice because that sort of tells the whoever is listening your thought process, that you did this and your sequence of action. But the motivation for this entire line of work, I think, was understated.
Okay.
I think you can present that maybe better.
Okay, so let's say I use this to motivate. I would need to choose.
So for here, you say your baseline is 7.5 and mm-hmm. you're predicting 8.5.
Yeah.
Real 8.4. But in terms of real missing, what is the percentage you need to improve?
We don't predict missing.
No. Like from the baseline, what you don't miss. At 7.5, what you don't miss.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And
that would be good.
At predicted, what you don't miss.
Oh, okay.
Then
okay.
You have an improvement.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. Basically, but if your improvement is very small, then people would argue the effectiveness of this thing, because
The button is that in this example, the difference on this will be
very small.
Small,
right?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm wanting.
Yeah.
Can you have a better example
then? No. I mean, with real applications, that we might solve it hard.
But, I mean, if there is flooding and the baseline does not account for wastage, I would expect the misses to go up substantially, right?
suddenly they don't.
But I don't see any data, dude, that tells me how many misses at 7.5.
Well, maybe that very tiny gap we see is actually 10 million misses. It could be a couple of million of misses.
Yep.
So
I mean, that could be, I don't, that could actually be about 10% at least. I mean,
yeah.
the line is, the slope is still not zero.
Yeah.
I still see a slope there. But
yeah.
If you can tell me how many misses there are, I don't think your statement that there is a really small difference is true. I think there is a, you know, even percentage-wise, there is a, at least 5% difference, if not 10.
Okay. Yeah, that's true.
It's good for sure.
Okay.
Also, what do those lines mean? Did you put there?
You mean the name of the word?
There are one line, so to 8, and then one line that signals to 9.
Yeah, well, actually, the line should
yeah,
be
yeah,
at
I mean,
7.5.
Yeah,
right?
they got shifted.
You got shifted?
Yeah.
Okay, so if
that's
you put it in the
problem.
If you put
yeah.
them in the right place, actually I think the difference is even more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, they will shift.
I think it's yeah, ten, more than 10%.
You move to the left, so then yeah, you're right.
Yeah, okay, no. Yeah.
Okay, so I think that's the key comment I had. One
okay.
of the key comments I had is to motivate this direction more. Because
okay.
otherwise it just seems like some low-level work which is interesting, but I didn't really get to see the real-world impact or visualize the real-world impact. I do a lot of work on my own to visualize the real-world impact.
But, you know, the utilization thing, everybody motivates whatever work they're doing with that.
With virtualization?
Yeah.
You could motivate not necessarily with virtualization, but with co-located applications, whatever you want. But
yeah.
But the reality is that the virtualization consolidation is primarily done with virtualization these days.
Yeah.
It's not that you're talking about the same things that other people are talking about,
yeah.
but you're using the same setting of a virtualized data center, but you're targeting a very unique problem.
Yeah.
And Chen will tell you that this is, you know, this is completely new. Nobody has done this before, right? So you have to, you know, not understate your contribution.
This seems like more general to any kind of test. I mean, you're talking about verification in this case, but you can think of this for, you can, I think we can use this for this.
Yeah, actually, that's the idea.
For any kind of test.
Yeah, I didn't say that that's the general slide.
I mean, I guess it covers all what the main work covers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you can talk about that's a very good point actually. You can talk about that in your last slide if you want.
Yeah.
When you summarize this, that our future work, this can also be applied to other kinds of caches which we have not experimented with, but we don't see why not, why we cannot apply the same ideas to
okay.
these caches.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, if you can do something like this, then probably, I mean, partitioning, for instance, the cache in the case of the disk is much easier than the cache. The operation system is, you know, the one which has top of control.
Right. So one question here is, how do you ensure that a set of applications running on a single piece of hardware are isolated? Can you ensure that with your scheme?
No, you know, you can say will be or will not be
right.
isolated. You cannot ensure.
You cannot
get caches where you won't have.
Right. The other question, so I think that has to be clarified somehow. Maybe in the Q&A session, but it would be better if you say what is the scope of your work. You're not
okay.
trying to guarantee that applications are isolated in terms of
yes.
performance, but you're just
answering
what
yes.
if questions. What if the set of virtual machines are placed on this physical host, does the performance look like? Are these
yeah.
applications isolated or not? So this this work is meant to answer that specific question, which is really useful because in a virtualized data center, those sorts of questions need to be answered.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which virtual machines to place on a physical host so that they are isolated in terms of the time. The other thing is, okay, what about the newer caches that support virtualization and that support strict partitioning? If they are available, do you still need this work?
Yeah, I keep
How would you use this work?
Well, it's like how much for larger partition should be.
Right, so you have to say that someone might say that, okay, but partitioning solves everything, but that's not true. Partitioning will not tell you how much to partition or how to partition. This work tells you how to do the partitioning. Right?
Yeah.
So although there might be new capabilities, you still need this work to utilize those capabilities in the best possible way.
Okay, yeah.
Well, you could also use those for motivation.
I have another question. Your calculations are very dependent on the cloning calculus.
Yes.
Is that hard to calculate?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, is there a method to calculate that?
We were trained at ways of using whatever the hardware can tell you, like miss rates and hit rates, and try to infer flood rates.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't get anything great on that direction.
Okay.
We need actually trace.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it seems like a very hard thing to calculate.
Yes, it is.
So how? So your question is how easy it is to compute the flood rate? Is that the basis of your question?
Yes.
Okay, so how do we compute the flood rate now for this one?
We got traces and we do it by hand.
You mean you simulate?
I mean, we got traces from Xenu and we actually calculated the flood rate.
Okay, so you need full memory access traces?
Yes.
I think you mentioned that from
Is there a way to estimate the flood rate without having full memory traces?
I mean, for example, in this case, you could assume that for spec power, you would have, it's most likely that spec power would have a higher flood rate than BT because it has more meters. but not necessarily.
So there is some correlation, or you can think of there is probably some correlation.
Can we say miss rate equals flood rate?
No.
Because some of the misses are real.
Yes.
Can we compute reuse rate then?
Right.
Yeah, reuse rate we can.
What about miss rate? We also have that, right? Then can we not get flood rate as miss rate minus reuse rate, no? So that equation doesn't work?
I mean, no, but you're missing something. We don't have wastage. So you have three open variables to the equation.
Okay, so what is the relationship between wastage, flood rate, reuse rate, and miss rate? I don't think we have miss rate.
We don't have miss rate.
Right. So if you put miss rate into the equation, how does that equation change?
I don't know. The relationship between flood rate and miss rate is,
well, can we say that miss rate is higher than flood rate?
Yes, you can.
Yes. And can we say that miss rate is higher than reuse rate? Maybe not.
No.
So we have another question. What happened when you, because you also talked about two applications at the same time. Well, actually, in the last sample, you have three applications.
Yeah.
But, so you can generalize for more than two applications?
Yeah, actually, these equations are more like summations or something, but we didn't go, I mean, I don't know, do you think it's worth it to go into that?
If there is an audience question at the end, you can provide a slide.
Okay.
That shows the more comprehensive equation.
Okay.
In your paper, you have the summation I from one end, basically, where you are able to accommodate.
Yes, many applications. Yeah.
Since you have this, then I don't see why you cannot just in this case what you did is okay, you did
two applications.
No, it's not about applications. Like you did a what's the problem? The full memory trace, right?
Full memory trace.
You get the number of packages.
Yes.
And then you got what you
yes.
But you still based on what you with all the miss rate you kept.
Yes.
You collect it along the way. And which means you need to collect those information.
Yes.
You don't necessarily need to, I think there is a potential to convert this to a dynamic model because the equation exists. Or you can use all the hardware parameters that you collect and just plug in, but even though the data will be constantly updated, it may not be the optimal data you get in the end, but at least you can get that one time with the method you needed to. Because you know that in the end you want to have a data set one time.
Right. Actually, that's a great point. I'm sure there will be a question about that. Is that you using all the models that are constructed offline, but can you do this in an online fashion as applications get added? And to do that, I think you have to address the question: what information you need to collect, and how do you collect it? Right? Maybe one slide talking about how you do it in an online setting, even if it is speculative, I think can be very valuable.
Yeah, but that would make us look really bad because we need many runs.
Many runs.
Yeah.
Yeah, but in an online setting, you could take multiple samples, right?
I mean, I could talk about phases and saying, assuming you have a long phase, if you trace a couple of a very small portion of a long phase, you have a good answer.
You could say, for instance, that in online applications, the typical transaction, right, or the response to one request, is has a certain shape in terms of the ERSS. So you get one request, you go through some phases, and then you're done. And then the next request comes in, you go through a set of phases, and then you're done. So you could take samples as requests come in. For those sorts of applications. If there are some applications that continuously keep changing and all the time, then you cannot do this because there is really no model because it's completely dynamic and keeps changing all the time.
Yes, that's
correct.
Yes.
So I think it would be useful to have maybe one backup slide which is speculative for how you would do it in the online case.
Okay. Yeah, that is because most of our experiments are fixed at level 2.
Right. That's a good point. I think it is important to generalize whatever we've done with level 2, maybe to say that doing this for memory is actually simpler than level 2.
Actually, that's why we did. I mean, we thought that if we did it at memory level, I mean, taking that work into L2 will be harder than taking L2 work into memory.
Mm. Why?
Because on memory you have, for example, whenever you try to get something from disk to memory, the programmer has to program it, right? But you have to
request it. It's software control.
But memory to cache is
Okay, I
see. You don't have any control.
I think, but that's a good point. I mean, you're talking about a more generalized model here, and we should probably talk about a little bit more about the generalized part of it. Right?
Okay.
Why is it generalized? Because it applies to multiple memory levels, and the reason we focus on the cache level is because we think it's the hardest
yes.
of all the levels, and if we are able to address the problem in a more concrete way at this level, then we can generalize those findings to other.
And also another thing, what I didn't say, another thing why we focus on DL2 is that because for these two memory programs are, you know, they're conscious about what they're moving from this memory compared to memory to cache. I think at least you will see less contention problems in memory than you see in caches, because in caches, caches are like transparent for programming. So.
And then overall, simulation platform, I would say you want much more efficient than the sheer thing that we can challenge.
Yes.
Then on top of that, are they different cores you should control? Each core on application, or they are single core running?
No, all of them were single core. Yes.
And if it's single core, then how do you want two applications to control?
With time share. Actually, that takes us to a different problem. You see that, for example, the simple case where you have this looping on an array.
Uh-huh.
Actually, that won't work on a timeshare scenario, because when the application A is running, you will flood whatever application B has.
Yeah.
On one quantum, you can access all the elements in the cache.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, that won't happen because one quantum doesn't give enough time to touch even 100 of the cache.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's also at that level, it's also an approximation.
Right, but in your final goal, if you want to apply it to virtual machine, you are not only time shared but also space sharing, because your multiple virtual machines are running on multiple cores.
Yeah.
And maybe hyper-threaded cores.
Yeah, maybe.
No, simultaneously multi-threaded. We don't want to be Intel.
Okay.
I think that those are important questions for that can come from the audience. What is the difference between running on a single core? And this is really, I mean, running on a single core today is probably unrealistic. For this kind of work, you're probably talking about multiple cores, which are probably each of them simultaneously multi-threaded.
Yes. So.
And then you have a L2 cache that is shared within a core, but L3 caches which are shared across cores, and becomes more interesting. And I think that you can say that's future work. You want to look at, you know, more interesting cache hierarchy.
Okay, so that was my question. I think I want to address those things in the presentation, not in the question. So
okay.
Should I put it on the beginning, at the end, question? I mean, related work, future work?
I think you can put it as part of future work.
Future work.
Because
okay.
I don't think we do that explicitly in this work.
No.
Right? So the best place for it would be in the presentation, future work, but there are other things also that you probably want to add in the presentation that I have made.
Okay, yeah.
But this is also good. You know, I think it's very important to address in the presentation.
Yes.
Or at least as a backup slide, depending on how much time you have.
Okay.
Is this for the IPM?
Which one? This one?
No.
It goes
all
performance. Performance and Sigmetrics, actually, every 2 years or 3 years, they are co-located. Yeah, but Sigmetrics is ACM and Performance is IFIP.
Oh.
Yeah. But they target similar work, both of them. Any questions? Was it absolutely clear? If there is something which is not clear, I think you need to tell it to Ricardo, because that will help him do a better presentation.
Well, for me, I think I'm lacking of abstract.
Lacking of what?
Some definitions that I didn't know.
Okay.
So you mean that
from the problem?
No, I think the definition, you're saying there were some definitions which were not formally defined.
Oh, I didn't knew it.
Such as?
Such as that word that they use in the graphics.
MRC.
No, link.
Link.
Me of the curve.
I don't know if it's
what do you call it in Spanish?
Yeah.
Oh,
me,
okay.
Me
of the
curve.
Yeah,
what's like? Yeah. Think in math, you cut it glass. So.
Hmm?
Think in talking about graphics in math or something, you cut it glass. Yeah.
The
meat was, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mm. Like, you just like go down, like, you perhaps should more interest in what you're doing because. You're like.
Yeah. That's true, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I think the color sequence, I think I don't know much about that. I'm sure you know more. But I think that in the beginning, if you motivate better, I think even the audience will be excited.
Okay.
And you may be more excited too.
I mean, the thing is that these works spend so much time that after you've done it, Don't want to see it again.
But then, I mean, the whole point is that after you're done with the work, you want people to, you know, follow up on your work. Right? And if you don't show excitement, then it's very hard for them to be excited. So,
I guess now, before you are after a publication, and then you are after a
reference. Yeah.
Well, I mean, for instance, I was in your IoTD presentation. I thought you were quite excited about that, or at least you presented in a way.
Yeah, I was really excited about that project. Yeah, I mean this one. I mean there's some things that look pretty magical to me still. I have to.
Get in touch with Akshay.
Yeah.
Because he's a magician. then he's the one who is introducing that magic. I mean,
yeah.
He has answers to every question that you have to ask him.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe not the answer you expect, but you will have an answer.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thank you. I'm pizza.
You need to be more excited about it. I'm actually really excited about this because no one has done this before, right?
Yeah.
And this is answering a very critical, or at least starting to answer a very critical question, which is, if I have a whole bunch of virtual machines, which virtual machine should I mix together with others, right? I don't have an answer to that, right?
Yeah.
How do I know? We are doing some work with, you know, with what Sajeev is doing, but that's at a different level, and this is at a different level too. And what we realize with Sajeev's work is that there are some cases where there is just, we cannot predict that these two VMs are going to work well together or not, because we realize that there is, you know, there is more detailed hardware level interference that we are not able to model, and I think this is actually doing that.
Cool.
So,
I know.
Believe in the work.
Believe in the magician. Actually, I think it's a really nice work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
didn't
believe
it? I used to believe it.
I mean, you see that. I don't know, we have really old references, so...
Yeah.
And that's not the criteria.
Definitely.
That's very one or only many criteria, but...
My point is that it seems like there has not been much work about this in a long time.
And the reason there is now is because, sadly, virtualization.
Sadly, what is that?
Well,
no, I mean...
Yeah. Wait, is it too much? Trivial? How is it trivial?
I don't know. Trivia.
No. Not trivia.
Yeah.
Trivia, like, it's too much. Everybody talks about visualization.
But I don't see it.
I mean, this could work
even for multi-processing. Actually, talking about visualization, in this case, it's just to make it, you know, virtualized. But from my point of view, this is
like
more like a multi-problem
thing.
We
should add cloud
and
yeah.
If you have cloud, you have another cloud.
Yeah.
But
just like changing the type
cloud,
of
right?
cloud. Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm surprised because you just came from VMware, so I don't see why you would be to virtual machines and virtualization research.
No, because I think that's the people should be talking most about virtualization, and they are. But apart from them, everybody else in systems works in virtualization.
That's not true. It's
you and the geek. I need some pieces.
I mean, architecture and systems research cannot ignore virtualization anymore.
Except
maybe for the handheld device. And even there, people are talking about virtualization.
Yeah.
So it's hard to ignore it. And
enterprise is all about me.
But what's the point of having virtualization on this desktop of this system?
To run different kinds of applications that with the hardware will not, but sorry, the software will otherwise not support. But if you can create an application, you can run any OS, then you can run any application.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
So, functionality.
Just like, you know that, on Windows 7, to run XP, they launch a virtual machine.
Backward compatibility.
Yeah, their backward compatibility is launching a virtual machine.
So,
there are
users.
That's not a good solution.
I think it's okay. In the end,
you just have to get the job done. And if it gets the job done and doesn't cost much, then
for 99% of the stuff you're going to do all the time, you have good performance, and then for one really old guy that doesn't want to change, you're going to need...
But it takes speed. Not some strange old guy.
But I feel that this work is really relevant. And I've talked to people about this work, and they acknowledge that it is necessary, right? It is important, and we need this work, but this is just the beginning. The way I see it, that there is a lot more to be done.
Even there, the R&D comes out reference.
I don't know why I don't get much on references yet.
Even if you don't care about references, I think you care about impact.
Reference is
one measure of that.
Yes.
If you don't care about impact, then why do anything at all, right?
That's true.
You should also do it for fun, but then there are so many other things that you can do for
fun. I know. You'll be scared of someone. You won't want to come back. Excuse me? Oh, yeah, sure.
What's that 11, by the way?
Oh, it means that you have 11 of that node.
11 phases repeated.
See, the thing is that I think this is a slide that in the paper it's mentioned that how to map this to different levels of caching or memory space, right?
Yes.
But then in the rest of your slides you never mentioned.
Yeah, I didn't.
Because toward the end of the talk, it's all about level 2 and with a single data. A single data point, which is, that's it. You need 7.4, I give you, then you need 1.2, that's it.
Yes, okay. Right. So I'll say something like, give the broad picture, these memory caches, and then at the end I'll say something like, now we'll focus on this,
I think, maybe your presentation and your job of presenting this work will be easier if you acknowledge yourself that this is just the beginning, right?
Yes.
And that you're addressing very specific problems here, but there is a lot more work to be done.
Yeah.
And that's why you need to have some sort of a future work slide. So here are all the things that we do not address, and it would be good to address them. And that we envision that people will address in the future.
Do you think I should mention a future work in portions that I feel are kind of weak?
Yeah, you should. Yeah. See, you don't. Right. So a lot of people forget that that paper is already published.
Okay.
So now you don't no longer have to sell the paper anymore. You just have to present what is in the paper. Right.
Okay.
in the best possible. Yeah, so somebody else can actually use that word, right? So go with that mindset. I think your life will be much more easier as you present.
Okay.
Yeah?
Yes. Okay.
One thing I'm a little confused here. You divide you generate this ERFSP, right? And it's based on all phase base. But in the end, everything doesn't matter how large that phase is. Everything needs to go to the cache anyway.
Yes, but the thing is that just as A2 cache miss is very expensive, a miss to memory into disk is also very expensive.
No, I mean.
So you're also concerned on those.
It makes more sense than we looking at, you look at the overall disk. That's what you have. It makes much more sense there. But if you only look at this, for example, in the end you have 256, right? You know, you have a phase of size of 256. And then on the other hand, on the upper left corner you have a subtree which only have one node, 16384, right? That has to go to the cache, you know, sometimes anyway.
Yes. So what you're saying is
what I'm saying is that from the paper I get an impression saying like if it's 256 and this fits in level 1 cache, which is good, then if it's 16384 and this fits in level 2 cache, which is good, then if that is 32768 and this fits in memory, that's good. Mm-hmm. But then I get confused because everything needs to go to memory in the end, in the cache in the end anyway.
But actually
I'm wrong.
I mean that's the case. Everything will end up, I mean, the processor cannot access something directly from memory.
Yep.
Everything has to go to the cache. But again, I mean, we are still concerned at the middle level because those misses at this level, up level, are also expensive.
Yeah, another way to look at it is to say that we want to know the sizes at those levels so that we know how much resource is being occupied at those levels so that we can provision those levels correctly.
Does that mean that every level, that's only the resource I need?
At that level,
that's
the resource I need.
Yes.
That's the goal, is to identify how much resource.
So that's that means you see how much dynamic.
At
every time instance, then I could have dynamically changed.
I could, yeah. If I can recognize which phase I am in, then I can say at this phase I need only 16 kilobytes of L3 cache, so I can fit in other applications.
Yeah,
because the scheduling is also dynamic, because then it depends on how large phases are. Right? If the phases are too large, then they may subsume multiple scheduling, CPU scheduling cycles.
So that means it's like different scheduling at a different level, which is chasing quite large, because like for the last example, 8.45 to 7.5, 8.5, you're looking at the whole lifespan of this application.
Right.
That's all you need. Then that easier the division for system software, because that's how it is. I know that all you need, I give you all the data.
Yeah.
All you need at that level. At one time, I give you that. But if we go down to finer degree, which means we can even do a finer job.
Yes. That's a great line of future work, I think. It's by knowing this tree, you can do even more fine-grained resource allocation and management, right? If the phases are long enough and they allow you to do that, then I can say, okay, well, this VM can, for the next, let's say, 100 seconds, can run on this core, because the other VM which is running on that core is in a very small phase, and it will not use L3 cache at all, right?
So what you're saying is that, let's say, this is the only input on a scheduled task.
Right.
This only, it could do a...
It could do many things.
Yeah.
And, but it also needs another input, which is to let the scheduler know which phase the application is in.
Yeah.
So it needs to know that.
You need to identify the phase.
Yes.
Can you write that down before you...
Yeah, well, there's not much space there, but there is paper.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I'm sure Ricardo gave you a lot more detail than I was able to give you. I know only enough to justify this word. So you have the list of my comments, and if you are confused about anything, I don't think you need to say that you're spending most of your time on motivation.
Okay.
You made a statement.
Okay.
And I think when you say OLTP, you need to say what OLTP is and what my transaction process. And then you had there was a confusing set of two slides where you mixed OLTP and Google.
Oh,
you use the same name or use, because it's not clear that these two are the same.
Yes.
I think it's figure out. There's some, you know, when I come, like, for instance, this is a slide title. There was no slide number, so it's hard for me to refer to the slide by number. So I just wrote the slide title in some cases where I remember to write the slide title. And I think slide titles in general, you need to have some revisiting of that, because I think several titles in the beginning just have the title motivation.
Yeah.
And it would be good to put some more descriptive titles.
Okay.
Addressing first to drawbacks. This is something you did. So I just wanted to the ERS has three figures, the font size is too small.
Yeah, I'll change to something more.
Yeah.
Two nodes, three nodes.
Yeah. Small. I think the construction of the ERS is three. It was too casual. You explained it in a more casual way. I think if you make it more systematic, I think it would be better.
Okay.
So casual sometimes is good, but I think in this case the casual was a little bit too casual. I think we have to make a little more systematic.
Okay.
You said something about all the applications have normal flood rate.
Oh yes.
It's not clear that.
Yes.
You think about something better. Most importantly, do not understate your contribution. It is important for you to present what you did, not to overstate, but also not to understate. And I think Jaime put it better, which is to, you know, don't feel disinterested in your work. That is one way to understate your contribution. But the rest you can figure out.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Very good work.
That's why I asked a lot of questions.
Very.
What are you working?
I'm working with picture is a architecture.
Okay.
And I'm mainly working on the multi-threading, SMP, microprocessor design. When you have the multiple threads running at the same time, which is and how to use or dynamically schedule the resources on the timeline to fit their needs.
Okay.
And then in that case, we use performance counter to identify the performance of the different applications. In this case, with threads, and try to match them up together.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, I have one thing discussion about this. I was already about pipelining, kind of software pipelining things for some system functions and stuff like that. Let me. We have to formalize
So we have a good architecture and hardware guy now, and Ken also does work with FPGA. Field programmable gateway. You can program a specific functionality into silicon.
Yeah, what you basically mean is that everything in software you can map into. So it's always a channel. One of what I'm doing is we try to compile the application behavior, identify what we call hosting function, and the application consuming the majority of the function, and we're selecting map into some of the other four processes and then we manage the
overall. By the way, I'm explaining the RAM thing with
the I asked him about the power measurement, right? The power measurement.
Yes.
And if any undergraduate student can help us to measure DRAM power. and if there is any sort of straightforward technique to do that, because one of our projects that's the roadblock at this point is to how do we measure, let's say on this box, how do I measure the amount of power that just the DRAM bins are consuming? How do I measure that?
That's
probably
not my question.
Yeah, so Chen actually pointed me to another professor. Okay. He's communicating with him now, talking to Gang.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, he responded saying that he doesn't have anyone in mind in specific, but he can send a request to the entire EC department.
Yeah,
too specific. Yeah, we really don't know what is too specific and what is not. And what are the standard techniques that people use to measure component power? I mean, especially if something on the motherboard. How do you sort of differentiate that this part of the motherboard is using this much power? How much CPU is using?
Yeah, this is really not my expertise.
That's fine. It doesn't have to be a model. It can be actual, meters. That in fact probably better for us than that to have a model. Because we do have models, and we have some problems with the models that Micron has published. They have power models for memory. There are some limitations, and they make some assumptions that we cannot really
if you really want to do that, you would have to make the input, most directly to carry the input voltage, current.
But the problem is that the voltage is feeding a whole bunch of different components on the motherboard.
I see.
So I think Lewis found something to measure the power based on the amount of heat dissipated by the delta line. But we weren't sure what exactly that meant.
Sorry, I couldn't be in
all. No, no problem. Thanks a lot for coming here. Thanks for all the really detailed comments. We'll meet again, I'm sure. Watch out for that cable.
All right.
Okay, I'll see you then. See you again. We're meeting on Wednesday.
Next
Wednesday. Yeah, so I'm writing a proposal.